Hello, everyone. This is Josh Oakes, and you're listening to the SmartSocial.com podcast. I'm so honored to have you here today. You're either a parent or an educator with students that are in elementary school, middle school, or high school, and you're looking for resources to protect your kids. You're looking for resources that keep your kids safe and smart online while also protecting the whole family and making sure that you protect your future, your online, because you know that we must be wise about what we're doing online. Today, we have an exciting episode, and quite frankly, it's a last-minute episode. We have a special treat. This morning, I received an email from someone named Tracy Wright, who's live on the phone with us right now, and she's in Florida. She said, I found your site, Josh, smartsocial.com, and I very much admire and appreciate your expertise on cyberbullying. My name is Tracy Wright, and I'm a freelance writer. I'm writing an article for Giggle Magazine in Gainesville, Florida, and it's all about cyberbullying advice for parents whose child may experience cyberbullying or participates in cyberbullying. I wondered if you could answer some of the following questions from a school's perspective or from an outsider's perspective. And I want to welcome Tracy to the podcast. Tracy, welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And so you're a freelance writer for Giggle Magazine. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And what's the topic of this article? I'm excited to answer some questions about it.
Well, basically, this is for our back-to-school issue, and it is dealing with cyberbullying and how it affects children, specifically, you know, tweens and teens, but we're seeing now that it's even starting sometimes in the elementary age bracket, and I'm a mother of two. I have a 10-year-old girl and a 6, almost 7-year-old boy. So as somebody who didn't really grow up in the technological era, I'm really looking for expert sources, not only for the article that I'm writing, but also as a parent myself.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you reached out. And we were talking before this, you're such a good parent. You're looking, you're searching for information, even though you don't see something happening with your kids now. You mentioned that you're actively seeking for your own family a resource, a set of resources, whether it's paid or free. And I told you, I said, I think you're a great parent because it's too late if you wait for something assigned to happen. And that's kind of what I want to talk with everybody about with today. What was your first question? Your first question that you have for your article? And let's just chat through this and let's let everybody on the podcast listen. Those of you that are listening, we thought we might just bring this up and share with you. There are no experts out there that have the one on the answer. It's really what you decide at home to be your very best solution. And quite frankly, this isn't the ultimate guide. This is a start. This is an appetizer, if you will, to diving in to anti-bullying, to cyber safety, to making sure your child is protected from other people. So Tracy, what was your first question there?
So I think that what a lot of parents are looking, and now as I'm talking to you, I'm realizing that maybe some of this work needs to be done even prior to this, but what signs should they look for to see, you know, to be aware if some sort form of cyberbullying is happening to their child?
Yeah, that's a great question. So some of the things that we're seeing, and I get the chance to interview a couple hundred, 200 to 300 people a year all over the world on our podcast and in our blogs, experts that are PhDs, psychologists and counselors. And we're seeing that some of the biggest signs from these experts, and forgive me if I miss one, but some of the biggest signs are, one, your child has a different level of anger. They tend to either lash out or there's something different in their behavior with a little bit of anger. Number two, a different behavior is they're quieter, and perhaps they're not as full of laughter or spunk as you may see. And that's the anger could be because they're lashing out because someone's being upset with someone's hurting them, or B, they're not as cheerful as they should be as a child, which is what at smartsocial.com, we believe your child should be a child a little bit longer. Hence why we don't want them to have a device until they're 14, a smart device until they're 14. And then number three, so we've got anger, we've got a little bit less laughter, and oftentimes number three, sometimes they're just dialoguing with you less and they're just not as open about things. And that's usually because they're being bullied. And so those are just some of the answers. There's a few more things, but we'll get into that with the next questions. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Right. And so I think what a lot of parents may experience if they see that their child is being bullied, I mean, there is something that I wrote about already. I've started the article called Moral Disengagement, which is a theory, a psychological theory, that when people don't see the reaction to what they do, they tend to not think it is a bad, they don't rely on the morals and ethics of, you know, saying something to someone's face. So if the cyberbullying has begun, what do parents do? I mean, I think that many might be hesitant to go to the school, or, you know, they don't want to feel like they're overreacting, or, you know, or if they go to another parent, is a parent of that child going to be defensive, or, you know, so what steps do they take?
Great question. Well, I think the worst thing that a parent, let me give you a story, Tracy, that happened to me 3 weeks ago, four weeks ago, and it explains what a mom wishes that would have perhaps happened around her child. I got an email from somebody, and the mom said, through the same contact form that you filled out, and the mom said, "We love what you're doing on the bullying, the anti-bullying program." She said, "My son died by suicide." It's the way that we say committed suicide nowadays. "My son died by suicide a couple years ago. And he was this age and this age, and we live in this city. And I was devastated. And now I travel around a little bit teaching people the signs that I didn't see." And this mom was so courageous. And in fact, she's on a couple episodes. She's back. If you want to go listen to her story on our podcast, she said, "I will volunteer myself to be on your podcast." And here's essentially what she said. She said, "A, I didn't see the signs. B, I sort of," and I hear this a lot, I'm not saying that she said this, but I wish I would have talked to my son about it more. And C, there were actions he was taking. He was watching shows like 13 Reasons Why. And I wish that I would have known that those were the things he was seeking for outlets. So what I would say, in a reverse way of answering that, dialogue with your kids. You cannot take too many actions to protect your children when it comes to this stuff. Yes, if your child is doing something and they bump their hand on something and they hurt, maybe it's okay for them to learn how to use whatever, that product, or they fall a little bit and they're wearing a helmet and they're in shoulder pads or you know, elbow pads, they hit their elbow, that's fine. They're going to bump, they're going to learn. But in this case, children do not have we developed our program around this because children do not have a vocabulary or the knowledge base or the data around what could happen and where the barriers are at. So when things are happening to them, they do not understand why they feel so bad. They do not know how to get out of it or how to climb out of the hole of hurt. They don't have that vocabulary to tell their parents, "Mom, I'm hurting." They just get quiet. They get angry. They get less So we tell parents it is quite all right to tell the school. You are not a helicopter parent. If you're bringing something up that genuinely could be hurting, if a child is a little aggressive at school and they're hurting other students as well, it's okay to go to the counselor and say, "Here are my concerns. And I want to tell you, school, about this, this, and this. I want to work with the school and do this." And we tell them, do that early, do that often, because the school would like to know that. And also the school has experts and resources that most families will never have. Right. And so we tell them do that early, and people have contacted us from around the world saying, "We wish we would have done that a little bit earlier."
Yeah. Another on the flip side of that is a question that people don't often think about because they don't want to think that their child would ever be a bully or a cyber bully. So what should they do if they discover somehow in their child's device, or maybe some pattern makes them think that they might be participating in cyberbullying? And one thing I learned that is not just the main aggressor, but even as a bystander, even as somebody who might be in a group chat where someone is aggressively bullying, cyberbullying another person, but you're just standing by. And I mean, I guess it's both ways. It's how do you deal with that if your child is the cyberbully? And then, you know, how do you empower your child to kind of have a voice to even just to say something to somebody about, you know, this is going on. I don't want to be on the record, but I'm worried because this girl is being, you know, harassed by this other person and I don't know what to do about it, or it's, that sort of thing.
You know, you bring up a great point. First of all, we like to tell parents to tell students, it's great to tell an adult because adults have more resources, and you're not, if you go to a trusted adult, someone that cares about you, like a counselor or your parents or the principal or a teacher, you're not tattling, you're communicating. I want to tell everybody right now that when we saw a lot of school incidences happen, whether they're school shootings or otherwise, one of my mentors came to me and said, here's some crazy ideas. A lot of my mentors came to us because we have the resources right now to be able to run around and create knowledge that helps people. We have the right heart, we've been told, to do this. So I set out and I asked one of my employees in the office, Elisa, I said, what do you think of this? What if I went and I bought the top 15 anti-bullying books on Amazon, and do you want to do this? And she said, I'd love to. So we sent her away for 2 or 3 weeks, and she just read like crazy and outlined notes and ideas from the world's smartest people, quite frankly. And that's not me. I'm a PhD in nothing, but she went around and she read all these books. We bucketed them into common themes that these really smart, awesome people have put together. And my dream in the world and our company's mission is to make stuff relevant for students so that it's effective for students. If we have the best ideas, but students don't understand them and we use buzzwords, then we have failed. So we took all these tips and we bucketed them into the following videos, Tracy. So, and it's in our Parent University program, which is really affordable for large districts. Parents can also buy it, but we have student videos, and the first student video that we have, we've got a bunch of these, but one of them is called How to Be a Supportive Bystander. And that's a really important one, because if you see stuff, it's essentially how to stick up for others. What to do if you witness someone else being bullied. Next is types of bullying. We teach students bullying is different than teasing. Teasing is a two-way fun little rally of ping pong, almost like I'm gonna pick on you and we're both giggling and you're gonna pick on me and it's fun. It's friends do that. But bullying is very different. It's a one-way hurtful line of communication and picking on someone. And we give examples of bullying and so on. And then we have another one that is called What to Do If You're Being Bullied. So video one is how to be a supportive bystander for students. Number two is what to do if you're being bullied. And in the beginning of these, it's defining bullying, giving examples of bullying, how to tell if you're being bullied, anti-bullying strategies, how to respond to teasing. And teasing is really a friend, could be a little hurtful, but doesn't mean to bully, but it could end up coming across as bullying if you don't know how to respond back. And everybody's personality is different. And in fact, some students, Tracy, as we all know as adults, they might have parents that are a little bit more harsh. And that might be the way that their parents have taught them to react or feel like people are friends, is when you're a little bit more harsh to others. Mm-hmm. And so we're really trying to give students a vocabulary around that. Students are not born with this. We as adults have to figure it out in our 20s and 30s. Oh, that person is a little toxic. You will never know that in middle school. And that's our goal. Then once we've gotten through the student videos, which is a bunch of them, we have parent and educator videos. The student videos are designed for a parent to sit next to the student and watch and let us dialogue about this, the who, what, where, why, so that an outsider can gently... Here's the problem sometimes, Tracy, we've found, and this is so true in every country in the world that we've discovered so far. Parents are uncool. And oftentimes teachers are sometimes uncool, meaning that when you're the loving, caring person in a child's life, when you give advice to them, they go, yeah, whatever. I don't want to listen to you. I want to listen to the cool uncle or this person or that person or the person on TV or on Instagram. So we try to develop that cool factor into our videos a little bit as an outsider, and we put a little bit of my background in there. Hey, this is, my name is Josh. I travel the country doing this. I got my start at Walt Disney Studios working on some of the world's biggest brands, teaching, you know, learning from these smart people doing this. And we make the cool factor, and then we dive into what counselors want us to share. Then we have parent and educator videos. And one of the topics we share is, and these are topics really any parent can find, is how parents can influence their kids to be good digital citizens. Digital citizens and adults need to model positive behavior, what to do if your child is an aggressive or an aggressor. And really the aggressor is what to do if your child is, we don't like to say bully, Tracy. We like to say right. If they are assertive, if you will, because we want to be gentle. We don't want to say, hey, your child's a thief. No, what to do if your child is looking for outlets for this, right?
Because nobody... oftentimes, isn't it true that the bully themselves also probably is suffering through some sort of self-esteem issue, mental health issue, you know, something like that. And that's why they're lashing out maybe.
And also, you're so right. And we've found that it's so much more. There's nothing black and white like it's in the movies. In the movies, there's a bad guy. There's a bad person. And they need to be removed from the movie. Right. But in the real world, sure, there's an aggressor. There's a bully. But they're usually being bullied at home by a sibling. They're being bullied at school by another person. There's an upstream environmental input into them that is hurting them, and they are looking for an outlet of that. It's almost like a stream of negativity. A parent, an uncle, a parent's new stepfather, somebody is aggressive towards that child, and there needs to be an outlet downstream for that, and that's usually what's going on with that student. Never black and white, always a gray area. We need to work with that child to figure it out. And the child doesn't even know sometimes that that's bad. So that's one of the things we call them. We're really careful about not calling the student a bully. I hate to be too oversensitive, but we notice it quickly and we go towards that child trying to figure out what's going on here. Let's talk about it. And really that's the key. I know we're a few minutes in, but dialogue is the number one way, everybody that's listening to this, dialogue is the number one way to protect your children. Knowing what apps they're on, do not allow them to be on apps. Parents, if you are not currently on those apps, please do not allow your students to be on Snapchat unless you are on Snapchat following them. Oh, but that's their privacy. No. There is no privacy online because there is no more common sense online. Common sense was thrown out the window as soon as we all got smartphones and all this stuff started happening and your students got a direct connection to people like the Kardashians, where the world is very different. And I hate to sound a little bit blunt there, but it's true. There is no common sense anymore. So you are the number one safety app as a parent. There right. is no outsourcing. Oh, but Uber will get me from point A to point B. I can outsource my transportation needs to them. Perhaps, but not safety. You cannot go to a safety app and expect a filter to know, have the wisdom that you as a parent will have. So that's number one, is dialogue and knowing where your kids are at.
Great. And I know obviously with your tactics and, you know, with preventing strategies, we never want it to get to this point. But let's say it does become a sort of almost quasi-criminal. You know, we hear about the term revenge porn, which none of us want to associate those words with a child. But basically, you know, a girl or a boy taking a picture of themselves, maybe in a compromising situation, sending it to what was a boyfriend or girlfriend, and then that being shared. And, you know, or somebody actually threatening someone online with some sort of violence, or even if it's not real, you know, it could be a perceived threat. At what point, you know, would you suggest that parents or schools would contact the authorities, criminal? And I think that there was a thought of, I know that in many states, including Florida, where I'm from, but in many states, there are differing laws when it comes to cyberbullying. is this something that would go down a criminal path if it, unfortunately, if it got there?
Yeah, great question. I would say step one, it's never too early to soften the issue and for parents to talk to their kids about it. Hey, middle schooler, or, you know, sometimes people will ask for an inappropriate photo of you thinking that, and they want you to think that you'll be better friends if you send it to them. What would you do? And ask the student to answer. Oh, I wouldn't send it, Mom. Duh. Okay, good. You need to dialogue about that first, early and often. You don't have to use the words porn or revenge and stuff, but you should. It's probably okay to say, let's gently dialogue about this to prepare. Earthquake safety. We teach kids in elementary school in California what to do. Fire safety, you know, drop, roll, and you know, protect yourself. And it's probably okay if you're careful with that dialogue to say, sometimes there's bad people out there that don't love you as much as Mom and Dad do. And they may ask you to do this or this. What would you do in that situation? And kids may think it's uncool, but running those wheels that are not normally used, mm-hmm, is really important very early on, we found, because it's too late. If that happens, students will not know what to do. That common sense, unfortunately, that safety will not happen. So dialoguing with them about, hey, sending an inappropriate photo to someone, is that okay? And when they answer no, or they think that through, it often ends up to no, boom, they're prepared and ready to go. Right. Second, if you see this happening, police are going to want you to come to them immediately. And that is the best bet. Going to the school or the police or both immediately is a great thing. Police have resources. Police will contact the parents immediately, especially if it's an aggressive student that might be doing. Going to the police may be the best bet. Going to the school and they don't do something, and then going to the police, the second bet, will make sure that the school takes this into account and does something with it. So, and police will often tell you, hey, we're your best resource. People come to us every day with something like this. We have protocols. And I'm not saying that the police will come and listen to your child and console. They're not a therapist or a counselor, but they will carefully and quickly try and figure this out. And they are a resource that you should know about. A lot of people will not call a police officer. And if someone's listening to this and they're in law enforcement, that's awesome. And there might be somebody for a specific reason that might not want to do this. But for the majority of it, officers are there to help. And we do recommend that you go to them, because then they can go, okay, we're not the right resource in this case, go to your local school. And they would love to be the first phone call. We would say go to the school first and then officers. But if it endangers your family, go straight to the police.
Yeah. I mean, I actually wrote an article about suicide. I've done a lot of mental health pieces and in amongst teens. And it advised, you know, one of my big questions was, well, what if it's not my child, but they come to me and tell me, you know, this person online, or maybe even has been talking about ending their life, and they said you can immediately call. You don't even have to go through the parent at that point, because it's a sign of immediate danger. So I think that's important to note. That I think that parents who may, like you said, I think if you go to another parent and you say, "Hey, your kid's a bully," they're immediately going to get defensive, obviously. But you know, one of the things that this mental health group locally advised is that, you know, if you have the warning signs early enough, start dialoguing with that parent, establish a relationship so that they trust you. And then you can say, you know, my daughter's noticed that your daughter has been kind of feeling down. I don't want to alarm you, but maybe you might want to, so you can start it early rather than it being, hey, you know, Susie has been talking about not wanting to be around anymore. And then you really do have to call the authorities, because it's immediate danger. So I think that's good to know that that the police, you know, are there, even if it's, you know, again, start with the school if it's sort of, you know, not minor. None of these are minor, but if someone's talking about immediate, you know, violence or that sort of thing, that you can go to the police. Because I think people will think that the police might think, oh, you're just overreacting, you know? And I think something too that's important to note is that I think that there's a notion, especially amongst people who didn't grow up with technology, and even older, like maybe you're talking grandparents or that sort of thing, who go, well, you know, everyone gets bullied. It's just something. Kids are just mean and that sort of thing. And I think that that needs to be so dispelled, because like you said, we are seeing it ending with, unfortunately, with shootings, with suicides, with severe mental health issues. People may retreat and become almost hermits because they don't want to have, you know, a link to society, because they feel that people are mean. And it's not just, oh, you know, everyone gets in a fight, everyone gets bullied. It's much more serious than that.
Yeah, so true. And we have outlets that are very different and much more hurtful. And once again, that comes back to that common sense thing. Common sense is very different. Students see school shootings. They see 13 Reasons Why. Season one was about killing yourself and how it's okay to do that and then blame other people, 13 different people with 13 different reasons. And then it portrays somebody, that student, as coming back to watch those people hurt, as though those blaming makes her feel better, the person that died by suicide. So it's there is no more common sense, and people that are older do need to understand that, A, you don't stand up directly to the bully. You go to a trusted adult. You go straight to a counselor, a parent, a teacher, whoever, a principal. You go to an officer if you need to. You go to a trusted adult to tell them, because they have resources that will help you. And then if you stand up to the bully, you'll end up, it ends up being, the experts would say, the PhDs and people much smarter than me would say, it doesn't end well that way, because the bully wants you to stand up to them and respond. And then another thing that tends to happen here, like you just said, is the outlets are very different. The season two of 13 Reasons Why, actually a student thinks about doing a school shooting, and that's the student's way of overcoming sadness and bullying and so on. It may not be bullying, actually. I'm sorry. But the student is looking to shoot up his school, and they thwart it, but they stop it from happening. But it shows students that might be an option. And another thing for all the parents and educators listening right now, Netflix, we don't get paid by any apps or any big brands. We only get paid by schools and parents. And we are very opinionated and honest when it comes to any brands that don't care about your family. And I do strongly believe, and I'm okay with saying this, Netflix does not care about your family's safety as much as they may seem like it. When they create content like this, 13 Reasons Why, they will create it to be extremely engaging for your students. And then they'll put a little tiny precursor on the beginning saying, hey, students, if you're feeling sad, you could go tell a friend. Because they realize it's so gripping and it's so motivating for someone to do something bad with this content that they feel a little guilty and need to put that in the beginning. We're seeing so many students watch this content and see this as an outlet, as it is, this is the fact. So be very careful with what your students are watching on Netflix and all these other pieces of content, and also what apps your students are using, because these companies are not motivated to protect your family.
Right. And I just want to share something a little bit that I had seen just recently. And if anyone remembers the Columbine shootings in 1999, and that they were done by two males, and Dylan Klebold's mother, who's one of the shooters, has gone around the country and just been an activist. And she has a TED talk that you can find online. I can't remember her first name, but you can find it by searching his name. And this was in 1999, before any of this social media existed. And she talks a lot about how, when she looked in his journals, you know, he was just a really lonely kid who had been bullied, and felt alone and felt ugly, and, you know, and that, you know, had she known that, had she dialogued more with her son, she wonders if it would have turned out differently for her son and for all the people that he, you know, affected. And I think I watched that and just thought to myself, that was, you know, coming on 20 years ago. Yeah. That was before Snapchat, before Instagram, before Facebook, you know, and yet there was still, you know, such a level of helplessness that he felt that he turned to this violence to, you know, somehow fulfill something in his life. And so I just think now we have so many more resources, unfortunately, that can affect our children, and how important it is, the work that you're doing to help parents understand that, you know, it's not just a shove in the playground or a, you know, it's so much deeper than that. And I think that as parents, we all need to understand that, both of parents whose kids might be the aggressor, like you said, or a bystander, or being bullied themselves. It's just, it's something that we need to really, you know, be aware of.
And you really bring up a great point. One of the points that you're bringing up that's so wise is a lot of people that that might be in their 50s, 60s, they might think, oh, you just go home. You get bullied on the playground. That is no longer the case, as most everyone that's listening to this podcast right now. The worst times when students are bullied are a couple times. And your student might be bullied in another area. But one is in a group chat. Oftentimes, some of the most hurtful content, you'll hear this from counselors and parents, really savvy parents, are the most hurtful content is in a group chat. And that's where drama starts. If your kids are in group texts, or they're on the Kick Messenger app, or anything else where there's a lot of group people, that's where the drama starts. And it does not happen on the playground. You cannot go home from cyberbullying. When you are at home, it is the saddest. It is the most hurtful. The weekends are sad when you see stuff on Instagram. So that's step one, is it doesn't happen on the playground. As it happens in group chats. And then second, it happens a lot, oftentimes on Instagram and other areas where you'll see that you were not invited to. It can be very subtle, almost passive bullying. You weren't invited to that birthday party, and there's a beautiful group photo of everybody saying, having so much fun with all my BFFs. And students will feel a little sad because it's not bullying, but it's the cool kids not letting your kids in, or not inviting, or not being very inclusive. And so there's different layers of what we're talking about that's kind of sad. And so this isn't black and white like the movies want us to think. And that's why you have to talk to your kids early and often. You would never give your child keys to a car. Everybody listening to this, Tracy, you know this so well. Right. There's this 5,000-pound device that people give their kids, 3,000 to 5,000 pounds, maybe 8,000 pounds if it's an SUV, and it's a car. And I always break it down for parents in our speeches. If you gave your kids a car on their 16th birthday in California, or wherever they can get a car at 16, would you, first of all, if you bought that car, do you have the right to keep a set of keys? Yeah, absolutely. Parents nod their head. Okay, great. Do you have the right to look through that trunk at random times to make sure that their friends aren't putting bad stuff in there, or your kids aren't holding bad stuff, illegal stuff in there? Absolutely. We have the right to look through that trunk at any time. Would you think that if your kids were caught and that car was in your name, that it could ruin your career, your image, in anything that's bad for your family? Absolutely. It would be terrible. Great. And you think if your kid was driving that fast, that you have the right to know that they were driving it erratically or in a way that could hurt another family, that could then come back to also hurt your family? Absolutely. Will that 5,000-pound car, whatever it is, it could be a clunker, it could be a fancy car, that car is no different than the device you're giving your kids at an earlier and earlier age, the smartphone. It can hurt others. It can really badly hurt your family. And if those of you that are listening to this, if your online presence you think could hurt your career, it is no longer about your child just having a good time on this device in La La Land, Disneyland, that is the internet. If your student does something that's tied to their last name, which is your last name, all of a sudden you are now liable. Your online image can change with Google results. It becomes a really real thing for some parents when they see that their kid made a mistake and it affects their Google results. So please make sure that your kid goes through driver's ed with that phone. Dialogue often. Have your kid's password. if you're paying for it, if you bought the phone, have a dialogue with that. Hey, and tell your kids how things can go wrong. Just like in driver's ed, this is how the car can crash. If you're texting while driving, if you drive drunk, people teach this to their kids thinking this is what we do. But oftentimes they don't teach it to their kids when they give them this very important device that we call a smartphone.
Right. And I also think that, you know, another thing you brought up is, and it's something that I actually had a conversation with my children in the car yesterday about this. And I don't know how it came up, but, I was talking about how one day when we feel that they're responsible enough to have a device and have a social media account, and we never say what day that is, but because I don't want to hold myself to anything, I said, you know, you have to realize that the things you put up never go away. And I said, and at 16, it may be really funny to put up something that you think is silly or a quote that you know, but then at 26, someone's going to go and look through your social media and say, oh, you know, this person wasn't very mature. And maybe some employers or colleges or something might say, well, they were 16 at the time, but there'll be a lot that might say, well, this is a person who's not serious. So I was trying to tell them too, that, it, you know, what you put up is always there. It never goes away. And how do you want to be portrayed? Do you, you know, what in what light do you, and I just don't think it's ever too early. Like I said, my daughter is 10. My son is almost 7. They play games. We don't allow them to play any games with chat functions or any sort of social engagement. And I tell them both very honestly, I say the person who chats with you and says they're a 7-year-old boy and they love Marvel Avengers like you do is most likely a 55-year-old man who's not a very good guy and is looking to hurt you. And that may seem really harsh at a young age, but I just don't feel that you cannot be too blunt when it comes to these types of things. You know, I mean, to me, it's as pertinent as it is talking to your children about, you know, being out and about and staying with an adult and not, you know, trusting people they don't know and, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, it is the same type of vigilance that we need to have with our children online, I think.
You're such a good mom. I have to say, you are amazing. And having those crucial conversations with your kids, here's why. These games care less about your kids, and they're going to put more abrasive stuff in front of your children. And so what you're doing is you're actually just having a crucial conversation that to you may seem a little blunt, and maybe to others, like, oh, I don't need to have that conversation. People are already having that conversation, trying to entertain your kids. Netflix and all these other, no, YouTube is already having that conversation in a different way, a way that you don't, none of us feel comfortable with your children. You're doing it in the right way, in a preventative way to protect the future of your children. And I think it's amazing what you're doing. Tracy, can I give you a couple ideas on how to help your 6-year-old and 10-year-old to better understand their future online? Can I throw out a couple ideas that we found that students like?
Yes.
First of all, you're a great parent if you tell your kids everything you do online ends up there forever, right? Everything you do ends up online forever. That's a great thing, and that's how we adults think. And we understand that as adults. It ends up online. Oh my gosh, our career. But I have a 3-step plan for every child, every family that seems to resonate better with students, which gets across the same thing. Step one, I tell parents, audit your kids using Google. Go search for their name. Find other people that are using the same name that have famous celebrities, maybe inappropriate adult stars, or maybe your student did something online that you don't even know about. It's shocking how many people come back to me. I had no idea. And then they all of a sudden have this 4-hour discussion about how they didn't let their kid online. They can't believe it happened. So one, go audit your student. And then when you're comfortable, audit your student with your students sitting next to you. And laugh at the other people that are inappropriate and go, wow, if you had posted this, it'd look like you. And could you think that person could be misunderstood to be you? Okay, no, they're 55 and they're different. You know, they're totally, you know, you're a little girl and they're a man, right? But all this other stuff. But it could be somebody that's not that much different in age. So have that dialogue with your kids. Go audit your kids alone and then with them. That will show them without saying it, they will go, oh my gosh, everything that I do could end up on these Google results. Mm-hmm. Whoa. Okay, so what does this mean? And that's when we get to step two. Step one is audit. Step two is dialogue with your kids about where they want to go to college, what they want to do for their career. Your six-year-old and your 10-year-old kind of know what they want to do with their career and what they don't want to do with their career, I'm guessing. And oftentimes it's either an engineer, a firefighter, NASA, a scientist, whatever that is, an artist. At a very young age, we like to dialogue with kids about where they want to go, what they want to do. Then it's much easier once you've audited them, once you've dialogued with them, maybe visit a college campus. Elementary school, my friends, is not too early to visit a college campus because it will preventatively show students what their dream is and use their device with a purpose instead of just a pastime. Their phone becomes their resume builder. And step three, so step one is audit your kids. Step two is dialogue. What's your career? If you don't know your college, that's fine. But let's dialogue about what do you want to do with, you know, in the future. And that subliminally paves a path for them without you paving it. They pave their own path. They audit. They see their audit results. You're just laying a dialogue just gently for them to follow without telling them what to do because they kind of have to decide, unfortunately, on their own. And then step three is, hey, when you're ready, when you're 14, 15, 16, as we suggest, when you're 14, a kid gets a smartphone. When you're 15, you have a dialogue, a family dialogue about what should eventually go public online so that by the age of 15 to 16, you're taking group photos with your kids and showing their volunteer activities in a way that is full of gratitude and positivity, which is what employers like us want to see and colleges want to see. They don't tell you this, but they want to see positivity and gratitude in photos with a clear description of what did you actually do? Who did you help? Who did you impact? And that starts to change as they take group photos at 14, 15, 16 with their parents' permission while being comfortable with what they're slowly releasing online. It changes step one, which is that audit. So we tell students, audit, let's audit as a family. Let's giggle and laugh together and make it fun. Let's two, dialogue about what the career should be. And step three, what are we going to start posting? We're going to have a family discussion at 14 so that by the age of 15 to 16, we're posting. And that by the age of 17, colleges and internships can find a positive online footprint that ties to your student's real identity if you feel comfortable with that. And most of America feels comfortable with their student having a little bit of an identity instead of the other interesting people mm-hmm. that are in there that are misconstrued as their student.
That's great. That is great advice. Thank you so much. This has been extremely helpful as a writer and as a parent. So I can't tell you, and I really do think, as I said, you know, we are, you know, I always say I can't do what I do as a parent, obviously, without my, you know, my husband and my family, but also the community of parents around me. And we're all going to be, a lot of us, for us, it's our oldest children. I have a lot of, obviously, girlfriends, so oldest daughters, and, you know, we all turn to each other when it comes time to, hey, you know, what's going on with this? What's going on with that? And increasingly, yeah, it's going to start to be those conversations about, you know, I mean, I got a question this morning when I dropped off at camp about a situation that had happened last year. It all got resolved and it did actually go to a group chat at some point, but we totally nixed that. And then, you know, the school got involved and presented as a group to the class about, you know, mediation. It wasn't really bullying. It was more just like, you know, bickering at each other, but that's where it starts. And so, and you know, we all kind of leaned on each other. And I think as they get older and the problems and the issues become more complex, we're going to need these types of solutions because we're all in it together and we're all new at this. So
yeah,
I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time today because I appreciate you. You're a great parent. You're doing all the right things. And it's awesome that you have the courage to jump on a podcast like this to work through some of these tips that can be best practices for parents and educators all over the country. If we're in this to protect children, there really we really do need to kind of sharpen our pencils to make sure that we have the best tip that's the right fit for our family. Not just, okay, I bought this book that is a cookie cutter. It really is. We're applying, giving everybody a menu. You select from these things that you feel are the right fit for your appetite, for your family. But you got to go to people that have the right menu and know your options. And that's really what we've been discussing here today. If any of this was not the right fit, or if you think this was a completely comprehensive guide, please understand this was just an appetizer. It is a journey. It is not the finish line that matters. It's the journey. And how can you, another tip that we tell people is part of that journey is how can you love your kids more than you worry about them liking you? And that means everybody that's listening to this right now, if your kids hate you once a month because you're hard on them, you're a normal good parent because you're actually doing the things that will make your children awesome people to be around when they're 25. We want students that are in kids and young adults that are well acclimated to the real world, that move out of your basement, that go on to be great employees and employers and awesome people to be around, to contribute to the world. No matter what industry they're in, they're helping others, they're contributing, they're doing great things. That means your kids at a young age are not going to like you. But you know what? That means you're loving them when you're difficult on them because you know the future them will thank you. And I think that's really important right now. Don't worry about your kids liking you as much. Have that passcode to their phone. Have a dialogue with them that is uncomfortable early on, as you said, Tracy, is that dialogue of, hey, sometimes people might want you to send them an inappropriate photo. I'm sorry you don't want to hear this, but we need to talk about this for 2 minutes, and then you can run along and do your other thing.
Right. Right. So true. Thank you so much for all these tips. It's been so helpful. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you to everybody listening to this. Those of you that are listening to the smartsocial.com podcast, you can learn more at smartsocial.com, where we have a parent app guide, a popular app guide page that has received about 9,000 shares on social media. It is the place to go to find three zones: the green zone, the gray zone, and the red zone. And we bucket the apps into those zones for the following reason. 1A, if you're listening to this, you need to know that there are green zone apps that when your kids and you are ready to be online, that you start in the green zone. But the gray zone is where the messaging happens, and that's where some of the group chat stuff is bad, and that's where Snapchat lives. You got to be really careful and be with your kids on the gray zone apps if they're on it. You also need to be on the green zone apps. But the green zone apps build a positive online resume. There's a bit of upside. The gray zone apps is a little scary. There can be quite a bit of downside if you're not careful. And then there's the red zone. The red zone, Tracy, is full of anonymous apps that do not help your child more than they hurt them. In fact, the red zone is full of predators, anonymous behavior, stuff that the downside drastically outweighs the upside. And that's why we tell parents, know what the red zone apps are. Now, we don't have every app in the whole world. We have about 50 to 55 apps. The most popular apps that your kids are inclined to probably go to, because there's the law of community, and the law of community says that your students are only going to go where their friends are currently at. And so if it has over 1 million users, we're probably going to do an app guide. Parents, you can go to these apps, you can click on them, and you can learn for free in less than 5 minutes from my staff in a short video of why your kids like the app, what the app does, how your kids can, why they get addicted to it, and what you as parents can do to get them off the app and a replacement app that you should put them on. And that's called the Popular App Guide. We also have a Parental Control App Guide, all the apps that promise to protect your family. We give you the pros and cons. We don't get paid by any of them, so I'm quite frankly blunt about what the cons are and so on. And then one more resource, if you're an educator and you're looking for a resource to protect your whole community, we have something called Parent University, which are videos that parents watch with their kids. It's an at-home study course, simple videos, PDFs, and guides that parents use to protect their children so that not only at school are you keeping kids safe, but at home, parents are able to sit down and watch videos with their kids so that they can make sure they're well-equipped for anti-bullying, for college prep, for safety, and parents have parent-only videos that they watch alone to get them up to speed on stuff. It's a whole lot. It's all available at smartsocial.com. Tracy, I really appreciate you today. I appreciate what you're doing to protect parents in this guide. And I want to thank everybody that's listening to this today. As always, keep it light, bright, and polite because your kids are watching. Thanks to everybody, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you.